Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I don't know, guys. I'm sorry. I'm not saying. I said Hot Kevin and
Kevin. Hot Kevin is good. Hot Kevin is great.
I don't know what was there for Hot Kevin. Like, what?
You just said you were coming in hot, so I went Hot Kevin.
Yeah, but you did it, listener. He did it with like capitals. Like, he did it capital H Hot, capital K Kevin. It was not a casual Hot Kevin. It was, your name is now Hot Kevin. Hot Kevin, proper noun.
Once I realized what you're doing, I loved it, Chad. But for a brief moment, I was like, was there a guy named Kevin in Goosebumps that was hot?
Once you realized what he was doing, do you have insight that I don't?
Yeah, you're Hot Kevin.
I gave my friend a complimentary nickname saying Hot Kevin.
It's just the confidence on display with Hot Kevin. I could only respond with a question mark.
You're Hot Kevin, the Kevin that is hot.
I'm Hot Kevin.
That's all there is to it.
That's just it. I'm Hot Kevin. I'm just struggling to come to terms with my new identity. And apparently, Paul and Chad have perfect clarity about who I am.
Yeah, I'm tepid Chad, and there's Cold Paul.
Cold Paul.
We were just talking about how you're Cold Paul.
I'll accept Cold Paul, but I prefer if you guys called me C Paul.
C Paul. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Thank you. It's kind of like when a person in a book has their Mister or whatever their like salutation is reduced to M, and they call that M last name. Have you ever seen a book do that before?
No. I thought you were referring to Jolkin, Rolkin, Rolkin, Tolkien.
Hold on. Tolkien, Rolkin, Rolkin, Tolkien.
Yeah, you know, he just goes by J.R.R. Tolkien because no one wants to say Jolkin, Rolkin, Rolkin, Tolkien.
That's not his real name.
Yeah, no, it's just like George Rartan, Rartan, Martin.
Yeah. Sometimes writers have interesting names, Chad.
No, it's true. They're so ashamed of it, they hide it by just putting the letters.
It creates too many questions that they don't want to have to answer.
I mean, yeah. All of our names are fake, right? No one would believe Kevin Cole is a real name.
Right.
I thought about going as a writer named CC Quant. I thought that made myself sound cooler, and I was a little bit ashamed of Chad as a first name. Not ashamed, but, you know, like, it means different things now in the zeitgeist to be a Chad.
I mean, CC Quant wears sunglasses.
No, definitely.
You think so?
Small ones. Really, really small ones.
Yeah.
My worry was, like, no one's going to read, like, a fantasy story by a guy named Chad. Like, right? You just have preconceived notions.
What if you just went purely last name? Just Quant.
Just Quant.
A book by Quant.
Like, most pretentious artist. Hey, can we go back to that? Can we go back to that Mr. M abbreviation thing for a second? Is that why? Is that, does M Bison, is that supposed to mean Mr. Bison? Bison? Yeah.
It's definitely Mr. Bison, yes.
It's actually Meissen Bison.
Welcome to Goosebuds.
Hello.
Welcome to Goosebuds.
I'm Chad.
I'm Paul.
I'm Kevin.
And normally we read the works of R.L. Stein, Goosebumps, Horrorland, Fear Street, other YA novels. But today we are doing a minor detour into another R.L. work, the TV adaptation of the 2023 Disney Hulu new series, Goosebumps. Goosebumps is back as a TV show.
Just Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Just Goosebumps.
Maybe we call it Goosebumps Plus for clarity.
Calling it Hulu Goosebumps. That's how I named it.
I like Hulu Goosebumps.
Hulu-spumps?
Hulu-spumps?
Hulu-spumps, yeah. That's the fandom, what the fandom will start using all the time to abbreviate.
The main character's name is Zach Morris.
What?
Oh, no, the actor who plays
Saved by the Saved by the Bell?
I'm sorry, his name's Isaiah. He's played by Zach Morris, which is, you named your child Zach Morris. You knew what you were doing.
Yeah, that kid is young enough that his parents had seen Saved by the Bell.
Absolutely. Oh, wait. He's British. They don't have it over there.
I don't want to freak anyone out, but this was fucking awesome.
What?
I had a lot of fun with this. I thought it was great. I also watched the Frasier reboot pilot in the same day, which was just terrible. Like, just no fun at all. Uh-huh. And I do like Frasier, and I do have fun with Frasier, so I was not expecting, like, anything. I was expecting nothing from television in general. But this was a treat. I had a lot of fun here.
Kelsey Grammer lowered the bar for you on a way where you came in so, yeah.
Kelsey Grammer was good in the pilot of the Frasier reboot, which I may still watch all of because I'm a freak. And the actor who played his son was also very good, but the other actors weren't quite directed well, or I don't know what was going on there. It just wasn't, it felt like Big Bang Theory.
Mm.
it did not feel like
interesting.
Frasier. But, yeah, that's not the thing we're talking about. We're talking about, Goosebumps. And I like these kids. I like this town. I like the setup. I like how characters respond to each other.
Now, Kevin, I need to ask, did you watch more than the first episode?
No, and I don't know if I will.
After all that, you're like, I'm good, though.
I love pilot episodes so much. I would, like, do a podcast that is just pilot episodes if there weren't probably like 20 of them already out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like the promise of a good pilot.
Okay, cool.
Sure.
I love an excellent setup, and I detest a like long-winded bad setup. And this, I thought, moved really well. And the characters were engaging, and you know, the characters also went a little from 0 to 60 with their emotions a lot, but they're teenagers, so that's forgivable.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Kevin. There were a couple of things that rubbed me the wrong way, and then I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? These are supposed to be teenagers. It's kind of fine. And I think it was a lot of the 0 to 60 emotional damage.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not like fucking Shakespeare or anything. Like, it's not even fucking Star Trek. But I, as someone who wasn't a huge fan of Stranger Things, this I felt like was really good. Like, it didn't feel like
interesting.
My issue with Stranger Things was, like, at least for like season two, the first couple of episodes felt like all set up and no payoff. And this, we already got some cool payoffs. Like, we already got some scares and stuff.
Things are certainly happening from the go on this. They don't, but I think I'll say this. I think I found it to be a little muddled of a pilot episode. I think there was a lot of characters. Mm. There was a lot of things going on and a lot of emotional lines being pulled that I don't think had the time to set up quite enough for me. So I felt it moved a little quick, actually, and I thought it lost me at a couple spots, but not too bad.
You know, it's just fun that we can discuss this like a real fucking story.
Well, that is something else I thought about, Kevin, when I was watching it, was I said, wow, it's told like a real story.
Yeah.
It is really hard, actually, to look at this as a solo episode, because, yeah, Kevin, it is a pilot.
Yeah.
That's the most obvious statement I've ever made about a show. It is a pilot. It is the first episode. But it's like simultaneously clearly trying to set up like arcs throughout the rest of this 10 episode season. But also it's like named, this episode one is named Say Cheese and Die, And if you really got into the nitty gritty, I guess you could say this episode's about a haunted camera, but barely.
Yeah, like, and is it? I'm assuming. I haven't watched past the first episode. I'm assuming that all of the things, the haunted mask, the cuckoo clock of doom, the say cheese and die camera, that all of them are going to carry throughout the entire series. That it's not just going to end with this one instance of using the camera. Because if so, I'll say that was my biggest problem with the writing of this episode, or maybe the directing or whatever, was I thought that the camera, we know how the camera works from the book, right? And if we are basing this off the book, I thought the books, this is going to be the first time I ever said this, I think the book did a better job of establishing in the characters' minds how the camera works and like giving them like a slow realization, whereas I think he kind of really quickly, Isaiah, quickly figures out how this works in a way that I didn't find to be that believable.
Yeah, the camera comes in so late, and we don't have to go into every single scene, but the general flow of it.
Can we talk about how it just starts with Drive by REM?
Okay, it goes from, and I think this is on purpose. I'm assuming this is on purpose. It goes from a fucking great song, and then jumps to 2023. To the worst song. Almost the worst song.
Unholy's not the worst song. I like that song.
It's not a but, good song, Jack.
But let's like linger in the 1993 zone for a sec, where like they play a lot of it's not Losing My Religion. It's like, you know, it is like a popular REM song, like a big hit, but like it's still like, holy shit, like that. That's a pick. Like, that is an intentional pick for like setting a vibe and a mood. And I was like, it's dicey starting with a needle drop like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If that even counts as a needle drop. But
no, it's such a trope now in all of these type of stories to do, especially as you cut back to a decade, you just drop something from that decade to nail it. I think the Fear Street movies that we watched last year, the year before that, had the same thing. Stranger Things, half of Stranger Things is 80s needle drops. It's very much like baked in now, almost to the genre.
Yeah, it is just kind of how you tell a story now. And like, I think part of the blame can rest on the 10 episode season, which I don't like as a thing.
You want more episodes of this show?
I think 12 is a good number.
Yeah, I like 13. I like 13.
13's great.
I think 6 is your best number. 6 to 7 is the best number of episodes.
Well, that's how I know I'm eating steak.
Well, that's a mini series.
You think that's a I think 6 to 7 episodes for a season, BBC mode, baby. Do it like the BBC does. They keep it short, they keep it sweet, and they move on to the next story, and they don't, and it doesn't run out of steam. Because Kevin, I'm with you. When it's like 10 or 12, especially 12, Netflix is egregiously bad at overstretching stories across way too many episodes and then canceling it despite having made so much stuff that they didn't need to make
with so much setup.
This is a whole conversation about how much streaming algorithms and higher up, you know, dictates what a story structure is now, right? Like even Netflix and the streamers going like, oh, we don't think we can sustain 13 episodes, so even if your story needs it, can you get it in 10? And sometimes you can feel the stories constrained or fluffed. I mean, there's some like Disney Plus shows where like, oh, you guys needed like 3 less episodes.
Yeah.
This would have been really solid.
It's almost like, I mean, this is obviously true, but they want you to end the season with, that was good, but like, where's the rest? Like,
wanting more.
Yeah. For like every show's like, for a show to be a success, like it can't just tell a story and then tell the next story. It has to be like, but you know, with a little more money, maybe we can finish this story.
So you think they want you to feel like it's not complete?
I think they are incentivized to tell an incomplete story.
I think their number one incentive is similar to that, Kevin. It is we got to get you to click through every single episode all the way, like whether we make another one or not, the whatever the term like completion is something I feel like I always hear out here in the industry a lot.
It's I don't understand this. This is what is wrong with everything. it's the same thing with video games. Doesn't have to be long. It does not have to be long. If you make it so good, you will watch it again. And you will have the person watch it multiple times. Now, The Sopranos is pretty long, but like, it's not that long. It's not that long.
No, it's so good
that you can watch it over and over again, and it only needed to be as long as it was. And it might have even been a little longer than it needed to be. But I think they do this with video games and they do it with shows. You don't need it. Like, it's all about now, it's all about retention and keeping people on your platform for a long amount of time. That's purely what it's about. And it's not about quality and it's not about giving people their money's worth. That's certainly not what it's about.
Well, there's at some point, there's the number comes in of episodes first, and then you kind of like fly by the seat of your pants as you fill that quota in. While we're talking about this, I think as someone who does this very, very well, to compare this to Goosebumps series, 10 episodes at the time of us talking about this, 5 had come out. The other 5 are going to come out over the next couple weeks, including very clearly Slappy is going to show up.
If you look at the cast list on Wikipedia, it's really great. Yeah. They have the main cast, the recurring cast, and then at the bottom it says, additionally, Slappy the Dummy is also set to appear. As if Slappy the Dummy were a real person.
That's fun. I like that.
That's cute.
I just, someone who does this really well, I think, by comparison, is I'm a big fan of Mike Flanagan stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Haunting of Hill House, Midnight Mass. Midnight Mass is 7 episodes, and like, it's perfect. I would definitely be down to rewatch it at some point. Midnight Club, Fall of House of Usher just came out too at the same point. Like, I'm like, yeah, how many episodes do you actually need to tell this story? And for Goosebumps, they said, we need 10. and they're all going to be named after books, but not really. I don't know how much you guys scanned ahead. Episode 2 is The Haunted Mask. Episode 3 is Cuckoo Clock of Doom. Okay. Episode 4 is Go Eat Worms. So yes, these are all things that have been set up in the pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
5, interesting, is Reader Beware.
Right.
Which is not a book title, just the tagline of the book series.
I'm down for that, yes. Break free.
And
good.
Based on the synopsis, it kind of almost reads like their take on an original Goosebumps story with Margot getting like trapped, going reading a scrapbook and being like trapped in the 90s of her mother's life.
Uh-huh.
That cool. could be a Goosebumps book.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's cool. Yeah. I like the idea of playing with 90s nostalgia a lot. And by the way, back to the opening really briefly. I love, having seen like Fear Street and like all these other like properties, maybe it's just because we keep watching stuff that was set in the 90s that is like R.L. Stein's Halloween-y ass shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I love how for like a generation of kids, the 90s will always be perpetual fall and perpetually cloudy.
Yeah.
Just so they can like justify the flannels.
Yeah, just so everyone can have their big flannels on.
And also in the 2030s, beyond, kids will be like, what do you mean it was like where it was overcast?
Right. You mean it was cold outside?
What are you talking about?
I had a question. Harold Biddy. Biddy? Biddle.
Biddle. Harold Biddy.
Harold Biddle walks into his house in the beginning and grabs a packet of some sort of flavor dust and drinks it. What do you think it is?
I was wondering what that was. I thought, honestly, I thought it was straight up some Cheezosaurus Rex mac and cheese dust.
Oh, you think it's cheese dust?
just downs it.
I looked to my notes to write something down, and I saw that he put some powder in his mouth, and I was like, wait, what? And I didn't rewind.
I rewinded, Kevin, to see if I could figure it out. I could not. My best guess, Carnation Instant Breakfast or Nesquik.
Oof.
I feel like that makes the most sense, but probably that wouldn't taste good. I think the thing that would taste somewhat good, Kool-Aid powder, maybe.
Sure. Maybe some Fun Dip. I don't know if Fun Dip existed in the 90s. Probably did.
I feel like Fun Dip is essentially Kool-Aid powder. Like, it's the same idea,
that's
right?
All this. Yeah. It's flavored sugar.
Yeah. So I think that would make sense.
This cold open is wild, by the way.
Yeah, it's much. And it doesn't say very much. It's completely without dialogue, which is like kind of a bold choice, I feel. It's a little bit artistic. It's a little bit fun.
Harold comes, a sad looking boy leaves the school in 93.
Yep.
Comes home, walks past a cuckoo clock in the room, in the house. I scream Cuckoo Clock of Doom and embarrass my partner.
I also noted that the bird in the cuckoo clock is very CG. like the worst.
It wasn't like a cool looking cuckoo clock or anything. It was just
I mean, the cuckoo clock itself looks fine. It's just, it's not a practical effect for the bird popping out. It is a CG effect.
Are we really at that point where it's cheaper to just be like, yeah, we'll just put a bird on there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we are.
Did you guys notice that as he was walking into his house, R.E.M. was singing? The man, R.E.M., was singing.
Michael Stipe.
And said, what if you rock around the clock? Tick-tock, tick-tock.
And that's when we saw the Cuckoo Clock of Doom?
It's actually right before it, but close enough.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's fun.
I just thought that it was a... it was nice to, as you guys were saying, you know, like, needle drop, if you want to call it that. I think it's just using popular music in a thing. We've gotten a term for it now, but it's always been a thing since Martin Scorsese started doing it. I think it's nice, though, when a song can be used not only to sound cool and to get across an emotion, but also to maybe add a little subtext, although I don't know that it's adding much subtext other than, hey, look at the clock.
I don't think it's doing much. It's adding atmosphere. The lyrics aren't contributing to this at all.
No,
I don't think.
Although they are seemingly relevant to...
An editor is doing some work.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the very least, it's going to get some kids probably to listen to REM on Spotify, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's
right. If this is like Kate Bush, would Kate Bush get a bump from Stranger Things REM comes out of this?
I mean, you know, if they do the same with like Gin Blossoms and Ben Folds 5 and Fastball and...
Get a fucking Fastball song in a 90s nostalgia, which I would pop so big for that.
If the next episode begins with Sooner or Later, then I'm in for the whole series.
wait, we say Sooner, is that the one? Sooner or Later.
He's got it. You nailed it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Paul Chad.
I want to detail this cold open a little bit more, cuz I just thought this was such a wild opening of Harold. We've talked about the Cuckoo Clock. Harold goes down into his basement. This is a massive mansion of a house. Mm-hmm. We don't know where his parents are. We don't know if this is a stay-at-home kid. He, in his basement, he's just got worms in a terrarium. I guess that's something a kid could do.
Yeah, he's feeding his worms to nothing.
He puts them into an aquarium full of grass. And then he takes
that's a terrarium, Paul.
Or terrarium.
It's full of grass, it's a terrarium.
A terrarium. And he takes a picture of it with the death camera, and I don't know if he knows that it's a killer camera at that point. Is he murdering these?
Yeah, I don't think it is a killer camera. This is where my theory is. Oh. I think these are all uncursed objects.
Yeah, I think he has to curse it with his death in order it to become a killer
camera.
Yeah, I
see. Because we see also
spoiler.
A mask, but not a mask that we're used to for Haunted Mask. More of like what the Jabberwockies would wear.
Yep, yes.
Yeah, yeah, it's like it's a ball mask for sure.
Yeah, it almost feels like a mold to put another mask on. But he's got that down there.
We see this G has got a four-colored pen.
Dude, the only 90s pen you ever needed.
You were set if you had a four-color pen.
I did like it, but also it really bothered me. It was one of those colors. Because you can't go to like the pen store and get a refill for that. You have to get rid of your whole pen.
The black and the red would run out, and then you were stuck with blue and green. And maybe you could get away with using blue, but if you tried to write in green on your test, your teacher was not having it.
No. You're not Dumbledore, dude. You can't fucking write in green. And like, I remember getting the four-colored pen thinking I was hot shit. Like, next week, kids were showing up with 5-6 color pens, and I was like, what are we fucking doing here?
I think the part where I started to lose pen culture was when people started bringing in, like, jellies or whatever they were called.
Oh, yeah, I remember jellies. Those rock.
Jellies were fun.
Everything was glittery kind of colors, and I do understand where teachers are like, I can't read this. Like, this is on... The brightness is too high.
I need some pens, and I write for my fucking self. I might go out and buy some jellies.
Is pen technology the sign of a civilization about to hit its decline? Because I feel like that
like
was
we peaked.
Like we peaked when we had jellies, and then things have not been going too great since then.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Rome inventing the aqueduct before it goes under. Yeah.
The 90s weren't perfect. People just had money.
Right. We were in the rocket had ascended fully, and we were at the top. But the fuel had burned out a long time ago.
Capitalism was going great. The war on drugs was winning. Bill Clinton plays the sax. Yeah, we were doing well in the 90s.
We had a president who could fuck.
Yeah. Once again, a president who could fuck.
Kids can't even imagine.
Tom Biddle, who we still don't know who this is at this point, is drawing some Junji Ito drawings in his notebook.
Yo, for real though. And no, 100% Junji Ito. Like, clearly inspired, right?
Yeah, which is pretty cool for him to be inspired by a Japanese horror artist who probably didn't even exist in 93.
Let's see.
All the way in
Maine. I mean, it was, Junji Ito was alive.
Well, he wasn't born an artist yet. He hadn't become...
It looks like Junji had something come out in 1991, so it is possible that he was...
Dude, this kid's getting, like, the fucking doujins from Japan.
Yeah, so what the fuck happens here? I know we're not supposed to completely know, but he answers the door multiple times. No one's there.
Yep.
And then, I guess, like, poltergeists just start knocking things around.
Yep.
He lights a candle and is like, whoa, I'm so scared, and runs back down to his basement. The cuckoo clock is going off again. Yep. It's because it's doom time.
Yep.
And it seems like he just falls and his candle hits the floor and immediately an arson
happens.
That
is literally what happens. Yeah.
See, he was living in a very flammable basement.
But the funny thing is, when we see the basement later, there's like a tiny little burn spot.
You know, kids don't remember how flammable things used to be back in the 90s. That's actually true.
That's proven true in the episode because Isaiah lights the camera on fire on his dad's wooden workbench with lighter fluid and just lets it sit there and burn.
That's true. Yep. He does. I thought maybe he was using like film materials and that's really flammable. Like, no, it was Polaroids. He didn't even have to develop it. This arson happens. And we get to a cut to a wide shot outside the house as flame erupts, a giant fireball, a level 6 or 7 fireball at least, comes out. And we instead see a skeleton devil face in the fire.
Yeah, this ghost fire comes out of the house.
That's how you know it was ghost fire, because there was a scary face in it. And then we get the most generic fucking title sequence I've ever seen.
Yeah, like, it's pretty uninspired.
That was a short meeting.
Somehow our podcast logo that is just ripping off the Goosebump font is more inspired.
It's more authentic.
I mean, at least we didn't have a masturbatory, super skippable 15-second sequence of ink drying. Like, that's what you want to... Like, I watched Rings of Power, which makes you look at sand bouncing around. For no discernible reason. Although the reason the showrunners gave was actually pretty... kind of interesting, but like I'm sick of this fucking like, well, we have the technology to show ink drying real interesting, like why don't we try it out?
Yeah, everything's like macro photography of something nowadays for an intro, for your intros of shows. That is,
it's like, guys, I also watch shows, I know what you're copying, like I know what you're doing, like I can see it when you're doing the same thing as everyone else.
Yep.
I know that's the game.
This pilot has so many characters that I'm going to challenge each of you and me. I'm going to say round table. I'm going to tell you the name of a character and you tell me as much as you can remember about where their character is starting off.
Okay.
So Paul, you mentioned it a little bit. You're going to do an easy start one. Isaiah.
Isaiah's easy. Football player. He's trying to be good at football and get into college.
His parents fight.
And his parents fight.
He wants to steal a test.
Yep.
Or he wants to pass a test so he can play football.
Some of the funniest lines in this show, I think, are hidden. And I think a lot of shows do this. Hidden in like quiet moments where you're not really paying attention to what's being said yet. Great moment when his parents are fighting. I had the subtitles on while I was watching the time before we recorded here. And his parents are fighting and his dad said they're fighting, I guess, about the things they like to buy and that are wasting money for Isaiah's college fund. And he's like, those little cupcakes with the stripes on them.
What is he referring to?
I guess Isaiah's mom likes to buy little cupcakes with stripes on them.
Probably the hostess.
That's what cupcakes. I'm thinking. Yeah, I'm thinking it's the hostess ones.
Those are not expensive.
And not that good either.
No, well, I mean...
Well, maybe the 90s, maybe they were better, right?
Like, well, it's 2023 now.
Oh, that's fucked. Sorry, never mind. Because Unholy comes on, and I'm supposed to tell you that's where we are.
You know, I'm going to go buy some Hostess cupcakes this week, and I'll let you know if they're any good.
They're not good. They're not good.
I mean, they're not great. I ate a lot of them as a kid.
Me too. I will say Isaiah also very good at knowing when he sees and uses a haunted camera.
Yes, he's amazing at that.
Isaiah has a girlfriend.
Yes, and her name is Allison.
Allison.
Which I know because he shouts Allison several times. She probably has her name repeated the most of any character. So that was useful.
He has a really weird a line reading of the name Allison at the party when she like gets mad at him for talking to his neighbor. Issa, I believe.
Margo? Margo, his neighbor?
Issa is the actress's name. She was on Star Trek Picard.
Oh, I'm saying, looking at the... Yeah, okay. Margo is her name. That's right.
You're cheating, Paul? You're cheating on Chad's perfect test?
I will not
test?
Look at the descriptions. I'm just looking at the names, guys.
That's very thematic for this episode.
Wait, you're not allowed to leapfrog past Allison. Tell me anything you know about Allison.
She's jealous.
Kill Bill.
She's jealous and she wants to throw a party and she likes Tarantino for some reason.
She wants to be Kill Bill.
And she is very embarrassed because someone took her Snapchat and put cat ears on it.
And pig. Pig noises is what the real big issue is.
Yeah, it didn't seem devastating, honestly. I thought a kid would be like, this isn't even a good meme.
And James, Isaiah's friend, makes a comment where she's like, how many people have seen it? And he's like, 1,000. She's like, well, it's so many. And Isaiah says, no, it's not that many. And he's like, it's like 5 times the number of people you know. And I was like, you know 200 people?
Well.
In high school, I do believe that there were like names of folks you knew, but you didn't.
Okay,
really
that's
know.
Fine. If you're going to go there.
I think there's like a theory that we can process up to 200 relationships. Like that's our cognitive limit of people we can know.
Yeah, this is why I don't meet other people, so I don't forget the people I know.
Wow, that's really sweet of you, man.
Okay, yeah, the theory of that's Dunbar's number, what I was talking about.
Oh yes,
Dunbar's
that's right,
number
yeah.
holds that we can only really maintain 150 connections at once.
Yeah. That's
doesn't that also feel like Dunbar made that up to cover his own ass?
Oh no, there's no way that's a real thing.
Yeah.
And every human is very, very different. But it's funny that it's a referenced thing.
He forgot his assistant's, like, partner's name and then, like, spent a year making up a theorem to cover it.
Like, well, you know, science says we can only make 150 connections.
You're the 151st. I'm sorry.
Yeah. How do we measure that?
I really want to believe that science has mostly been used to cure people's social anxiety.
but why is it so rampant, Paul? Why is there still social anxiety?
We can't make up science fast enough to cover it up.
It used to be way worse.
All right, we got Margot. Yep. Margot Stokes. I guess is coded a bit as a nerd.
Margot reminds me exactly of who I pictured Lisa to be in Fear Street.
Okay.
Oh, sure. The character we thought was Rachel Dratch.
Yes, Rachel Dratch. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I can see that. She's smart that she's got a test for Isaiah to cheat off of. Her dad is a teacher there?
I think the principal or the guidance principal. Counselor or something.
I believe. Yeah, it is a guidance counselor. I'm looking on the Wikipedia and cheating.
Steph, yeah. Also, come on. Just stop casting Rob Hubel and things, guys. He's never acts. He never does any voice. Any character.
I was like, is that old Andy Samberg? Who is this? No, Andy Samberg's not that old.
No.
Am I thinking of that other guy from SNL who's old? Who is this guy?
There's so many guys like that.
Most famous probably for Human Giant, Kevin.
Human Giant, yes. Yes.
I don't know what that is.
It's fine.
Is that an isekai? I don't know what that is.
You really cut that off quickly. You really didn't want me to talk about it.
It was like a middling level sketch series that for whatever reason,
it was pretty
the
funny.
Three guys from Human Giant were like launched into careers. And now we have
Paul Scheer, Aziz Ansari.
Paul
and Rob
Scheer. Mm-hmm. Just because of Human Giant, this is like 6 sketches.
There were some good ones. There were some heaters in there, Chad.
Margo, I would say, is maybe the most interesting character out of this.
Really?
If not for Mon. Yeah.
You think so? I think she's the most, like, at least in this first episode, she has the least kind of to work with in this.
I thought so, too. And then I think my favorite part of the entire episode, which is during the party that has now been suddenly moved. I guess it was set up. It just happened so quickly that the party is now being hosted in the old Biddle house that's been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a scene that I thought was actually like decent character growth, which was Isaiah was going to Margot to like, and there's this like frustration over like, I guess like Isaiah wasn't supposed to invite Margot and hadn't told his girlfriend about her showing up. And she has some sort of line of like, listen, if you're too, you know, embarrassed to say my name to him, into them. It's basically like, I'm not going to be your backup girlfriend.
Oh, well, she's I just watched it. The line was actually pretty good, because he cheats off of her in school so that he can get off of academic probation in order to play in the football game. And then she says at the party, she says, I'm not going to be the girl you cheat with, not on tests and not at parties. And then she leaves.
Yeah, I liked that, because it basically jumped to there is some sort of a power dynamic here that Isaiah is taking advantage of. And I liked that Margot sort of got that back.
She gets to, I guess she does get to have some goofs in this. Because I think she has a couple good scenes. The best scene she has is with Idiot Lucas, who is, his character is Idiot.
All right, so just to hit a few more beats of the story, like, I do like how prevalent cameras are in the first half to show that there are literally cameras everywhere in modern life.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish they did something with that. They show Lucas with a GoPro on his head as he skates off the roof and falls, like, bloodily to the ground in his first appearance. That's Lucas, right?
Yeah, that's Lucas.
And honestly, he came and went so fast, I wasn't sure the first time.
I gotta say, that's a great point, Kevin. I also think what's really interesting about this is Goosebumps for teens this time, because they curse a little bit in this.
Oh, yeah, they say humpin'.
They say hump. The humpin' joke was good. That was a funny joke. It made me laugh.
To go over your camera point, Kevin, also Isabella, who is not developed at all, I'm assuming is a later episode, more important character. She is seen recording stuff all the time in school. She's recording the pep rally.
Yeah.
I think in the hallway she's recording. It doesn't really come up anywhere. Her character doesn't do anything.
But okay, so here's what I think. And Kevin, to your point about the cameras. And Chad, to your point about Isabella filming and stuff like that, I think I think that's my qualm with the first episode, is I don't think it did a very good job of making any sort of point. Because it's a pilot episode, though, it kind of has a lot more to do. There are just so many characters that are introduced in this. We've been talking about these characters for for 30 minutes already, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget the mantra of R.L. Stine, which is saying something is for nerds.
Wait, I want to yes and that, but can you extrapolate that a little bit more? I don't remember that quote.
In a recent interview with Rolling Stone, R.L. Stine says, there's always this rule for years that in children's books, the characters have to learn and grow. And I thought, why? Yeah. Why can't they just be entertaining?
And he goes on to say there are no morals in his work.
Yeah, there are no ideas, really. Are they saying cameras are bad by showing all of this surveillance and the prevalence of cameras in our modern life? Maybe.
I don't know what's going on.
Not at all.
No, because I don't think there's anything that's really said in this, at all about the say cheese and die camera. I almost feel like this one was man, the Say Cheese and Die camera and the Say Cheese and Die book are really not about a lot. So why don't we just stuff that into the first one? That one can kind of be a nod so people know what we're doing, and then we'll move on and never.
But that's and that's also, I was about to say iconic, which I feel like is a bit, that's one of the biggest Goosebump books, right? And sure, there's not a lot explored, but you can tell some stories with a camera that Final Destination has done 6 movies about essentially being able to know how you're going to die.
Fatal Frame, if you want to do a haunted camera story. You could have a whole fucking show.
Oprah Din. Think about how good Oprah Din is as a video game.
You could have this whole first season just be Say Cheese and Die. You could. It wouldn't leverage the IP, perhaps, quite as well as
it would certainly be a 6 or 7 episode season instead of a 10 or 12 episode season.
AKA the best length.
But it's not until, while these kids are at a party and they realize this door to the house is open, which we realize is only open because in a previous scene, Justin Long has shown up during the day with a construction crew to renovate the house. And while trying to open a hidden door, he jacks his hand and the blood comes off and magically goes into the lock and opens the door. It's some sort of blood lock.
There's a lot going on that hasn't been explained yet.
Right, which is okay. You can set things up and pay them off later. It's okay. But so now at the party, these kids are, woo, there's a spooky basement.
That is a really sharp crowbar.
It's a stitches situation.
It's a gnarly gash.
It's a situation.
That's a situation. Yeah.
Yeah, I was glad to see Justin Long suffer. I'll say it. So this basement room that the kids uncover is hugely important because it's got all the creepy things. They find the camera. They see the mask. They're scared of the mask.
I guess they bring the worms upstairs.
They bring the worms upstairs, I guess, which leads, what's the dum-dum's
Lucas.
Name?
Lucas finds it, yeah.
Lucas is just like, anyone dare me to eat these? And I don't know, kind of seems not prompted by anything.
Lucas,
but
I'll say this about Lucas. His character is just dumb, but I got to say he has good chemistry with a couple of the actors. I think he does a good job with Isaiah with that want to see me eat a worm scene. I think he's pretty funny there.
I thought all of these characters were really well acted.
Yeah, I think that most of them do a pretty damn good job. I think Margot and Lucas have one of the best scenes when she's in her outfit, her spy outfit, and he's...
Yeah, sexy spy.
Yeah, he's sexy spy, and then she's like, she says, I'm a spy, and he's like, that's not what a spy would say. And then, like, they have a good little scene. I think they're pretty good together.
That's the most where Lucas... I was interested in that character developing further because it showed, oh, maybe there's a little bit more Still Waters Run Deep. That's a character I love to write. And it's hard to do, but
yeah, I think they're clearly showing that there's something going on under there. But all that he's given to do is idiocy through this first episode.
I do love. Do you want to see me eat a worm? And I said, just like, sure.
Yeah. Why not?
He's like, fine. I love Isaiah. I think he's a really interesting character. I mean, we've seen like the jock with all the pressure on his shoulders before. Like, it's a well-worn trope, but there's something about that character being as likable as Isaiah is, like, that's fun.
Yeah,
I would hate his ass if I went to school with him, but
the most relatable Isaiah is, and this is a jump a little bit, is once they've discovered the camera and Isaiah has had a photo of himself taken depicting not just a broken arm, but you can tell in the photo he's screaming, oh, fuck my arm, right? You can just feel that vibe from the photo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually enjoy this, maybe because the football Chad in high school had similar things, but the panic of realizing the camera that you thought you destroyed is back and now you're being ushered onto the field.
That was a great moment.
Yeah.
And frantically telling your teammates in the huddle, protect me, save me, is very funny.
That sequence was great what happens is he discovered, I think he figures out how it works a little too fast, because there's not, they should have built up to, instead of having both of his girls, I guess, get almost killed, like have one of them get injured and him like see it, you know, and then move up to the death one, because that is how it works in the book. Like a couple people get hurt before there's any sort of death threat, right?
I will say it is say cheese and die and not say cheese and get maimed.
But it's not how it works in the book. That's what I'm saying. Is it in the in the book, you do get hurt by it's a way for them to establish it, right? Like you need to going straight to death. I mean, now in this show where kids do die and turn into ghost fire, maybe we could have killed some kids beforehand.
Yeah, I've been okay with losing a kid in this first episode to raise the stakes a little
bit. Raise the stakes, lower the cast, please.
I like the four. I like the four as a unit. I like that they're not immediately all good friends or whatever. Like, if we have Isaiah, James, and Allison, and Margot as our, like, four, like, Scooby gang or whatever, like, I'm down for that.
We have Lucas and Isabella on the side right now, kind of as tertiary.
Yeah, this seems like it's going to be five total or six, but they're waiting for them all to kind of come in.
That seems like too many.
I mean, I agree with you, but that seems like what they're setting up. I think we haven't even talked about, you know, take it back, as much as I said, much like Margot, I think James is the most potentially interesting character doing the comic relief without being a cliche. I like that James seemed to be coded as like non-binary, but they weren't making that James's thing,
right? James is funny because James is just spoiled and has hilarious lines, like when James is fully loaded Rubicon gets damaged.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. And then I'm gonna have to text my mom are pretty good lines.
Seeing James like looking tiny driving that giant ass Jeep was really funny.
Yeah, James is cool.
I've known a few Jameses in my life.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if you listen here, if you haven't watched this episode yet, you might be like, well, there's not that many characters. On top of this, we are also getting scenes between multiple adults and parents who all know each other, either because their kids are friends with each other, or because they used to date, or one's the principal and also a father. And what we'll realize at the very end of this is these parents were part of very much a, like, what, like Stephen King's It.
Yes.
Like, we all used to, this is very Friday the 13th with, like, no, sorry, Nightmare on Elm Street with, oh, we all fucked up something long ago and now it's coming back to curse
us. It's pretty clear that they fucked up Harold, right? That's the boy. It's pretty clear they bullied Harold and he died. That's my read of the beginning sequence. Yeah. As they bullied him, he fell down, accidental death. And then they probably didn't get in trouble because they, you know, probably ran away and didn't take any of the blame for it. And now he's going after their children, which is exactly what you're saying. Like, it's a Nightmare on Elm Street. Or I guess, is Nightmare on Elm Street that? It's similar.
I thought the parents, it's been a while since I've ever seen, I thought the parents of the school, like, fucked over the Freddy, but also maybe I'm getting the Treehouse of Horror confused in my mind with Willy.
It's been a minute since but it is a horror. It's been done before, that horror story, and it definitely is following that type of plot, I believe.
Yeah, they literally say sins of the father in this.
Do they?
In this episode. Yeah, like the sins of the, it's the sins of the X will be visited on the Y or whatever. Like,
I agree with you, Paul. I think we are led to believe very very easily that, like, oh, the parents did something to Biddle, and that cold open was them bullying him. And yeah, the way it was shot, you could just be like, oh, off camera always was like one of the kids running away from the door that they knocked, and then they pushed something over in the basement that made things go aflame.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting a dollar bet that somehow these kids in the 90s got into some level of occult stuff and, like, sicked an imp or something on top of
it. Now, that would be dope if they sicked an imp on this guy.
Like some level of, it was just such a level of paranormal where, like, yeah, it could just be a bunch of kids hiding in the house and they fucked up a kid. But the fireball was a giant skeleton.
In my head, it's exactly the imp from Doom.
Yeah. If there's not an imp in this show, I am going to be so disappointed.
They
now
summoned it from, like, a magic card, and they said, go get Thomas Biddle. And the imp was like, yeah, absolutely. And it ran off and did it.
The satanic panic was real.
It was all real.
Presupposes.
I mean, if we're dealing with R.L. Stein's works, it probably is. It probably is real. Here's my biggest fear, and I was really afraid that this show was going to do this. And
let's see if we can solve your fear, Paul.
Yeah. Can this fear pass?
Make this fear this fear has passed.
Yeah.
I think it has passed, actually. Okay. I was very afraid that Justin Long was going to... I thought we were going to do the same thing as the movie and have stealth R.L. Stein, right? That Justin Long was going to be R.L.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
Here's what I don't want to happen. I don't anymore want the Goosebumps properties to lean on the fact that, hey, it's Goosebumps, and you know the Goosebumps stuff. And that's the only thing...
the meta version of Goosebumps.
Yes. So annoying because it kind of just skirts around the fact that there's not a lot going on under the hood and that all we have are the covers and that's what you're here for, is to see the covers come to life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think that's very valid. The myth of making RL the Crypt Keeper, we got to stop.
I do think
it was fun for like one movie.
Yeah, I was fine with it for that one movie, but I don't want that again. I think Slappy might be that horrible stand-in for it, though. I think Slappy might be the imp, Chad.
Well, it's interesting to see what you might. I mean, if Slappy was the one doing it and fucking everything up, it actually would be great. Because clearly he's coming up at some point, and I'm trying to figure out what is the origin point of the cursed items, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think those items, those objects of power, if you play Control, were already cursed until the death of Tom Biddle.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the inflection point?
What is the Biddle kid's name? Harold?
Harold, yeah.
Harold Biddle, yeah.
I like that you're calling...
Which is a name from the original book, right? Wasn't that one of the names from...
I don't know. Let's look. I'm going to Google it.
It's actually been very hard to research and find because now everything comes up with Tom Biddle from this Goosebumps TV show. But I thought in Say Cheese and Die, that was one of the names.
Just to like run us through the rest of the plot of this episode.
Yeah, please, Kevin. Yeah.
Mr. Brad is the guy who owns the house where they're having Allison's Halloween party. He shows up and very calmly tells everyone, hey, this is my house. Please leave. Like, all things considered, he's taking this like a real champ. And yeah. then he says, or I'll call the police. And then everybody runs out, panicked, into the woods.
Because Kevin, he wants to hit on all the teenage girls.
The next day, he shows up at lunch and he's like, where's Isaiah? And Isaiah gets ratted out that he's here. And Mr. Brad's like, hey, I'm Mr. Brad. I'm going to be your English teacher. You left this backpack at my house. Here's the camera. I'm going to be really cool about this and not tell your parents. Don't have secrets with kids. If you're an adult, don't have a secret with a child.
I thought for sure he had an ulterior motive at this point. Justin Long jokes aside, I thought he must be having... He's being too nice about this.
Yeah.
He's being too cool. And it seems like it was generally played as, I just want you to tell all the other kids, my house is now off limits. All right? Cool? Cool. Secret between adult and teenagers. Like you said, Kevin, not a good idea.
In real life and in fiction, don't be an adult who has a secret with a child. Benign or otherwise. Yeah. It's never a good idea.
I do think this show is being coy with like setting up stuff. I think there's a lot of mystery box stuff going on. So while I do agree with your premise, I just think that you know what? You're right. He's just getting himself in a situation that even with a evil curse is going to be a problem.
Well, his motives don't matter after by the end of this episode.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he gets ghostified.
He gets ghostified and he likes it.
But we have the football game from hell. And that was actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
I liked that it was characters acting some of the way rationally. Like that was fun after the bad flip side of characters acting rationally, which is ghosts don't exist and I'm in a horror thing.
Yeah.
Like the thing we all hate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after photos have been taken at the party, Polaroid of Margot and Allison in states of distress, not death, I guess. I mean, maybe moments from death. Margot choking, having an allergic reaction to peanut butter or peanuts. And Allison just, what, being in the woods, I guess?
Yeah, she's around Harold. I don't think it does a great job. This is where I really think the episode falls apart, is that the picture of her is taken and the picture of her is in the spot where he finds her. But I feel like the character needs to know about the danger to stop it. Because ultimately, why didn't she die? He didn't do anything differently than what he...
Harold wasn't going to kill her.
Right. Like
it seemed, yeah.
So it's like, it doesn't really make sense for what the whole idea of this object is, this cursed object is. That's all.
You know what did a better job with creepy pictures was that episode of So Weird we watched.
Yes, it did.
Yep.
The fact that the Polaroids go white is like, you know, fine when That's he tries cool. to show other people.
I think that was good. I wasn't upset about that. Yeah.
I was trying to figure out if that meant that the curse had now passed, or he, like Isaiah was like, oh, the camera doesn't want me to show anyone, which is now, because there was one he tried to show that was a yet to have happened future.
To him, yeah.
So I wasn't like, okay, is this like a fully sentient camera? Because it does have a bit of a, like, a Chucky doll come back from the dead, pops up in his football locker room as if it's sentient and moved there of its own accord.
Right. There is something ghostly and haunted about it. I do think it is being tricksy when it turns the pictures white when he tries to show people the pictures. But I did really love that. I like, just to get back to that sequence, I love that sequence where he smashes the camera. He's like, I'm just going to destroy it. You can't fuck with me. And then he has a great first half, comes back in. He's triumphant. He's doing his thing. And then he sees the camera and it doesn't.
It's so good.
It's really good. He truly feels shocked and is just pulled out in the chaos that he just created of getting everyone psyched up.
Yeah.
And he's stuck in his head. And then, it's a great moment of just him. I love the, like, we're not focusing on winning, we're focusing on goals. And then the responses of his teammates are really funny to that. And then it's a cool visual sequence. When the first ghost football player turns around and his face is all flamed up and
all burnt.
It looks good. It looks like a little Sam Raimi-ish. It's cool.
Yeah.
It also seems to propel him into a touchdown, which I didn't seem
fully
impressed.
Like, oh man, he's gonna get it.
Maybe he should always be haunted by ghosts. Maybe that'll help him.
Yeah, he runs like 90 yards and evades multiple tacklers of zombie phantom men.
He stiff arms like five phantoms.
Yeah. I really got to give this show made by a bunch of nerds credit. This is evoking when I played football in high school and I had a concussion on the field and my vision went white for 9 seconds. Ooh. And I was like, I can't see. I'm scared. And my coach was like, get back out there, Quani. And I was like, but I don't know where I am. And they just kind of pushed me back on the field. It was one of the most tense moments of my life. And I think the sequence captured that.
That's awesome.
Is there that much like shoving in football camaraderie? There's a lot of shoving each other.
There's a lot of hitting each other. There's a lot of tapping each other's balls. Yeah.
Balls and butt. Balls, butt, and backs get tapped.
I feel like in the normal world, you get shoved and then that's a prelude to start swinging, but like there's a lot of just like shoving.
No, you're like always on the borderline of a fight when you're on a sports team.
Yeah,
with each other.
Also, you don't want to be honestly ever at the bottom of a big tackle.
Scares the hell out of me. That's why I could never play football. That's why I never did.
Other players are doing things as much as they can to your genitals.
No,
it's a horrifying dark part of football.
No.
Yep.
One last note of during that sequence is Nora, who is Lucas's mom, and we see her in the beginning of the episode, seems to see the ghost.
She has like a second sight of some sort.
Yes, she does. The ghost makes itself. I think the ghost looks at her because Harold does the same thing. Look, Harold's a little one note. Harold shows up, looks at you, and then goes ah, and then turns into flame, and his whole face disappears. So she sees it, which when the arm breaking happens to Isaiah and he's taken to the hospital. She
bone out the skin.
What's that?
Bone going out the skin.
But the not
going out the skin.
Ugh,
bone
worst.
Bone pop out. Bone visible. Bone out skin.
Not to tell him what he could have done too. Isaiah, you could just take a knee.
He can take a knee. He can spike it. They had a first down, right? They were on first down.
Yeah.
You know?
When that fantasy happens where like the nightmare is like, oh, he's trying to throw the ball, but it is like stuck to his hands like goo, which by the way, if you're a running back, that's a dream, baby. You can't lose the ball if you wanted to. I just was like, just take a knee. Just spike the ball. You're good.
He knows though. He knows that the camera knows that whatever he does, it's breaking that arm. We're seeing that bone tonight, baby.
There's some guys just gonna jump the line and just like full on spike him.
Double leg drop kick his arm.
I was kind of hoping that he'd slip in the mud or something and just like, oh shit, I landed bad on my arm and now it's broken. Like,
like some
fit. I also was wondering if like this was going to lead into a crossover with that sports choose your own adventure.
Oh, the one we read where there was a gun?
Back to pass.
Yeah. Back to pass, yeah.
The best Choose Your Own Adventure we've ever read, yeah.
I mean, and then from there, like, Nora hints at the fact that they probably did something to Harold back in the 90s, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And then we kind of wrap it up at that point. We see Justin Long get possessed by a teen, which is his dream, apparently.
no, he wants to possess teens, not the other way. Is any of this illegal? Am I gonna get sued for slander?
That's what, I'm not slandering Justin Long on this episode because I don't know anything about what you're talking about.
Kevin, can you just keep putting in the voice allegedly every time I say anything?
No.
This is a retroactive allegedly. I'm safe.
You're making Kevin an accomplice in your crime.
He's in so many horror movies now, I can't fucking escape him. They're like, Barbarian was good, put him in everything now.
Well, look, Chad, take this solace. He plays a bad person in all of them, so that's cool.
Yeah.
So that's basically episode one of Goosebumps, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, and well, my feelings towards this show took about a 3-star drop as soon as the credits hit because
the song
get that goosebumps every time. I was like, fuck that. It just put such a bad taste at the end. I think needle drops are important. You can't just be willy nilly and go like, oh, well, this is a song from nowadays, or this song's got the word goosebumps in it. Let's use it.
Well, that's what I was saying about the REM song at the beginning, right? Where it's like, we're just using it because it has like the words that match up with what we're doing, but there's not any thematic connection, right?
Yeah.
And that's Goosebumps.
We don't have any current plans to cover more of this unless you all would really like to hear us talk more. I'll be honest, I do really want to see how they handle Slappy.
I do as well.
And the last episode of the season is called Return to Horrorland. Mm-hmm. I would love to know. It's probably just going to be a local festival carnival and then they call it Horrorland, but I would love to see how far they go with that.
Here's the thing. I'll probably watch some more of this. I have Disney Plus for a month now, I guess.
Ooh.
With ads. So I might watch a little bit more of this, but I don't know. I liked the pilot well enough. I expected literally nothing, and I was excited by the trailer. So, you know, I guess I made it like a bandit.
I kind of felt the same way, where I was like, well, I liked that Justin Long was in it, and Rob Hubel. The two people that Chad was least happy to see, I liked that both of them.
Oh, my God, he's just one note every fucking time.
He is a little samey with it, but
yeah.
I was excited by that, and I thought it looked like it was, you know, decently produced, and it lived up to that. I was a little lower on it the first time I watched the episode. I rewatched it right before we recorded, and I liked it a little bit more. And after talking to you two, I actually think I like it even more at this point.
I'd say if our patrons really want us to cover the rest of the series, I'd be down to just sort of cover it as a season.
Maybe we could break it into like chunks, like a couple episodes.
Yeah, or maybe we bring it up on like a Camp Goosebuds or something.
Yeah. I think we did a really great unbiased critique of this show.
I think we did a really great unbiased, zero libel containing episode of our podcast.
I think we all held it together.
Slander's spoken. Print is libel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just want to clarify. Unless someone is transcribing our podcast, which if so, I'm
awfully
so sorry.
Awfully libelous of you to say, Chad.
Yeah.
I was excited for Rachel Harris, the mom, to show up. She's great. She's always good in things.
I don't know if I know Rachel Harris, but she was good.
Yeah. She's a big character. She plays in a lot of stuff. I also, as rough as I have on it, I had fun watching it. I think this is actually closer to what I was looking for in a Goosebumps adaptation or a 2020s version, more than the film.
Yeah,
I agree. As great as Jack Black was. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so referential to stroking RL's metaphorical dick that that like this was a little bit more like, yeah, the horror of some fun stories that we could jump into. I just do wish the pilot was a little bit more of the actual story of a haunted camera, but maybe this will pay off in later episodes.
I don't think we're going back to the haunted camera personally, and that's a shame.
You think it's gone?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's out of there. It did its thing, but you know, I'm interested. I want to see what this vision of Goosebumps is, because it seems pretty fun. Like, I like all these kids. I think it's well acted and well shot. But you know, it's. Ultimately, maybe I'll just, you know, pop in X-Files again, and then my subscription will run out and I'll forget this exists.
It's funny. I did afterwards. Heidi and I were like just kind of craving something similar, but better. And we put on So Weird and watched an episode of So Weird.
Whoa!
And had a blast.
Whoa.
And
which episode of So Weird did you watch?
It's one that I was going to nominate for maybe us covering on a future episode if people want to. It's one where the premise of this episode is that the rocker mom from So Weird meets a handsome man who walks out of the beach, and he's very clearly a mermaid who wants to kill her. It might as well have been a Baywatch Nights episode.
That's
It was so weird.
Oh, shit. Dude, I love So Weird. I'd love to watch another So Weird.
I would also like to watch that. And let's throw it to our patrons, to our listeners. Let us know. Give us the word on our Discord. If you're a patron member, you can become on our Discord and talk to us and tell us what you think. And then I don't know where else people talk to each other anymore. We've lost all the good places to talk to each other.
Yeah, tell Gail down at the farmer's market that if she wants to plug her ear holes with something, she should listen to Goosebuds.
Speaking of spreading the word and also Patreon, we've been meaning to tell people this for months. Patreon has been really awful about communicating that major changes went to their payment structure and what sources they accept. And I would say if you're a patron or consider being a patron, just double check your settings and make sure you are actually pledging to the people you want to support. You might not actually be having those charged and might not be getting the rewards you're looking for. Patrons just making some really awful choices, including a new logo rebrand that looks like, I don't know, wet it's, gum.
It looks really like an alien ray gun.
It's affecting more than you would think. A lot of folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let us know what you think. If you want us to watch more, Kevin, I hope since you were going to watch more that you will let us know how it proceeds.
Yeah. I mean, you don't rest all your hopes on me, but I'll give it a look if I'm out of shit to do.
The fourth episode, Go Eat Worms, sounds like James gets superpowers from eating worms,
okay,
which is not what happened.
There's
in the
a
book,
lot of protein in them, so maybe good.
Yeah, what if there's monster blood?
It's all coming together. The Goosebumps cinematic universe. What else is going on, y'all? I mean, we obviously, of course, want you to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/goosebuds. And just a heads up, if you're wanting to get some Goosebuds merch, our store is reactive and back up with all of our wonderful items you can adorn on your skeleton for both the fall and holiday season. That's on Etsy.com/Goosebuds. If you just search your name on Etsy, you'll find our store. Some very cool stuff. And Hot Kevin modeling a shirt.
Hot Kevin?
Hot Kevin.
Man, if only people could tweet out hot hashtag.
If only there were a place to put our hashtags.
Hey, make sure you skeet out on Blue Sky, Hot Kevin.
Please reskeet me on Blue Ski.
What else going on? Kevin, what you got coming down?
I am working on a lot of things, but I actually have to go check on my cat pretty soon because she's been meowing at me and scratching on stuff while we've been recording. Hey. So I'm just gonna say check out givekevinmoney.com if you want. There's good stuff on there. I'm working on two big projects and I could use some help. So if you feel like supporting me and my tiny furry goblin that I live with, then check out givekevinmoney.com. That's my Patreon.
I'm going to recommend someone play a video game. Radiant Silver Gun by Treasure is a lot of fun. Give that game a play.
Ooh, Radiant Silver Gun.
Check it out.
Okay.
On the Sega Saturn?
It's on Sega Saturn. It rocks. It's a really good game.
I'll recommend a game or a Let's Play you can watch. I recommended this to Paul. You should check out this Capcom beat-em-up called Battle Circuit. And found out that Paul had already played it on Continue 4 years ago. And you know what? I was right. It's a very funny episode. You all had great riffs on the things happening in the game.
Beautiful.
So find the Continue Battle Circuit episode.
Beautiful. It's a good game.
I think that's it. We love you all. Thank you for listening. And Justin Long, we'll see you in court.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. This episode of Goosebuds is brought to you by our wonderful Patreon supporters, especially those highestly vaulted in the Book of Names.
The Book of Names.
Starting with Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara.
Hollis Hornbeak.
Lowbelly Hate Me.
Nathan Dolezal.
Mike Lanteri.
Mickey C.
Michael McDowell.
Hey Josh Rob.
Cameron Murphy Audio.
Buddy Morrill.
Mel Dipson.
Ailkate.
Afshin.
Dango Twist.
Zenta Bumps?
Oh,
it changed.
Stealth Bates.
Robert Moon.
Brian Wells.
Jason Crooker.
Miguel Pardo.
John Keaty.
Clay Castle.
Galf.
The Juggalobalist.
Slink demands Paranoia Shop content. Of course you would, Slink. You
Slink
demon.
Move.
You demon monster coming for my dad's junk.
Gregory D. Warren.
Cody Redfield.
Bradford Coulter.
Aiden pledges their hammer to Dwarf Daddy Kevin. Thank you, Dwarven Child.
Jar Slinks.
Chosen One.
Levi Than.
Up and Champ.
Jonas Engman.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Thank you.
Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
Yanni Markovina.
Elusive Koala.
Shrew Applegate.
Christian Vanskever.
Brooke X.
Jesus Christ.
Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor.
Patreon _ donator, comma, yo.
Joe Spooky Digital Ghost Tierney.
Tom Whittem.
Lord Cornwallis.
Andrew Jadzik contributes for approval some Ice Church Schism faction names like Methodicists, Frostbitarians, and Coldfolix.
I like Frostbitarians because it's not even like a pun.
Yeah. Frostbitarians is like the winner.
It's a real Presbyterian way to go about it, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Murphy P.
Carson Birkenbean.
I don't know. It was pre-gotten.
No, I get it.
Devin Ticklebean met an apple man? What?
You know what? I'm hooked into that story. Tell me more.
Terrified of the apple man.
It's just we've gone so long without a chapter update in the story of Tevin Ticklebean, and now we get this dramatic reveal.
Where did they end up?
I don't know. I think also the fact that Appleman's not capitalized, but Tevin Ticklebean does, makes it Appleman more insidious.
It implies there are many Apple men.
Sean Minogue.
Rushy Glenn.
Wiggle It.
Alicia Grafe.
Luke LaFontaine.
Matt McClellan.
Chip Handsome.
Tanya Turtle.
Juan Jalapena.
Timothy Misodilakis.
Keith Halcrow.
Jonas Blatterman.
Clay McCarty.
Parker Lee.
Ham underscore boat.
The Crow Fence, but seasonal.
Ooh, pumpkin spiced. Raymond Hernandez.
Matthew Sutton.
Jeffrey Owen Cahy.
Kelsey Kinneman.
Russell Castberg.
Xavier Jimenez Castillo.
Ooh, Scotty Pippen.
Joe, regular name, Scott.
Chris Putrikis.
Alex Boone, the robotic dog.
Flemily.
Dungeon Kappa.
Tobias Clark.
Zach Ware.
Lip Duck.
Ice Acolyte Hamster turns his cup of ice lava down.
No!
Yes.
Yes.
Meet Virginia.
Luke Noodles.
Zambambino.
Hugh Boland.
Estamina, Lord of Paul's Pants.
Nathan Remick.
Chris, Spooky Gym Shorts and a 4XL t-shirt. Stiffy Nelson.
That's a big stiffy if it's 4XL.
You got a flagpole in there?
God damn, dude. Maybe you should talk to a doctor about that.
It's a big dog shirt. We all know it's a big dog shirt.
It's a big dog shirt. It's a TC Tuggers. Need more kimchi.
Putting a different meaning to the term TC Tugger.
TC Tuggers. It's not a joke shirt.
Streak?
Lee Wood.
Reed Stubendick.
Kieran McNamara.
Diet Soda.
Lamb, the aspiring demon lord of friendship.
Aww.
Joey Evans.
Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza.
Tacky Tammy.
Carewise Gamgee.
A pair of Scots.
Levi Kidder.
I had a foursome this summer. I don't want to tell my parents, but I would like someone to tell me they're proud of me.
Good job.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty sick, I guess.
Gotta stay hydrated, and I bet there's a whole spreadsheet you gotta fill out.
Hoped you wrapped everything tight, you know.
You got a lot of consent there, which is cool.
Yeah.
Three other people said, yes, be naked near me. And that's pretty cool.
Impressive.
You could probably tell your parents.
David Gray.
Cameron Hansen.
A wild, swaggy Yolo Squire appears.
Throw a ball at it. Matthew Brittato.
Bryce Yuri.
The Deadly Bold.
I am Cornholio. I need TP for my bunghole.
Generally depressing.
Lava Church is launching a magma missile at Ice Church. You have 24 hours to evacuate.
What the fuck? What the? No, guys, you're in Ice Church.
Yes.
You better start getting some cold stuff together because we have a lot of lava heading towards Ice Church.
We gotta build a snow fort right now.
Listen, my Ice Church persona is just a guy who's like down for whatever. He's always gonna say yes like a total creepo.
He's Joker-fied, is what you're saying?
Yeah, he's Joker-pilled and boner-fied.
I feel like I'm the only one trying to keep Ice Church frozen, and it's really troubling.
Melt the ice.
Boney!
Ben Bohan.
Jonas N. Voldsen.
Some of Chad's bird friends who now live in the rafters at Ice Church. Aw, but they can come down whenever they want.
Joe Gorman.
Burgers overturned cup. Boiling, free the entity.
No!
Yes!
Nicholas Maloney.
Anthony forgot to make a funny name this month.
Don't worry, he still did.
You'll get it next time, Anthony. Tiffany Lee.
Eric Horwitz.
Thomas Jansis.
Mutant. Still thinking about burgers overturned cup.
Burger.
I can't stop laughing at how stupid I said that. Mutant astronaut.
Lucretia MacEvil.
Germ Juice.
Calamity Carl.
Nick Johnson.
Henry Torbert.
Boner Guard Epsilon Hamilton, a.k.a. Hambone, host of Radio Bone Air.
That's so many titles. Adam Knapp.
Ryan Carroll.
Logan Derby.
Jeremy Bowser.
Chick.
Brad Schmelzer.
Megan McCormick Mason.
Callum, Mr. Misfire West.
Skeletorin.
Ninja Breadman.
Mandy Nasty.
Yoplin.
Hello to Kiss Ferentulin.
Aaron Lord.
Philip Reynolds.
Dr. Chuck.
Nate Bit G.
Mr. Unimportant wants to know if you can pee on the Ice Church floor.
Yes.
It depends on
your
temperature.
Pee freely.
You know what? I'll say yes. knowing that it's going to overall contribute more to the ice. I will say that.
It's not quite the lava we're expecting it to be, Kevin.
Nothing more refreshing than a nice cold piss. Scott Wable.
Ryan R. Davis will not step in the piss.
You can pee in regular church.
Robot Arena.
Rocco.
Omegal Bagal, a.k.a. Omega Bagel, a.k.a. George, a.k.a. Josh.
Congrats on being in the Joe Parra special, Josh. F-Dog.
SSJ Trogdor.
Llama Lad.
Greg Musto.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Sprinkle Buns.
Hi, first time, long time.
Allie Rose.
Hilda B.
Chris.
The discography of Blues Traveler and inhalation of skunk weed enhances Pauly Shore's piloting of the Gundam Sandrock.
That tracks.
Always saying it.
I understood everything in that sentence.
Me too.
Yup.
Liam Rogers.
Soggy Newspapers.
Ollie Sutz.
My Cart.
Kate the Great.
John W.
Dakota Camp.
Chris Kulik.
Saturn Video.
Gulliver.
Cassandra Harris.
Wade Norcross.
Kiwi O'Blurb.
Serial Killer X.
Oh, that last name was my favorite.
Kira, that was convincing as hell. Kira and Brian are big fans.
And big Nick Lane.
Blake Cavan.
Dan Antonio.
Kit Bush.
Sarah Sin.
You Over the Moon.
Dennis Wright.
Crash Callahan and the Voodoo Death God.
Farah.
Yeah.
CM.
Cameron Ganseveld.
Several upset horses.
Jesse.
Goblin Grater, the thawed one of the one true room temp church emerges.
There's another church?
Splitter.
Matt Septor.
Greg Gervasi, a.k.a. VitaZed.
What's up, Greg?
Cole Gleason.
Chris Gerdo.
This news is scary. I am to marry in February the 14th, that day at 11.
Da-dun. Michael Malloy.
Jesse Box.
B.
Anthony Rodriguez.
We forgot to change our Patreon name for a while, but Jeff Webb, Big Baby, and I still appreciate all the ongoing bits in the book. Oh, no.
Oh, no. We don't know what that was going to say. Could it be book? We don't know. S.
Kyle O'Neill.
Alpaca acquaintance turns their cup anti-clockwise.
Yes.
Huh. I mean, yeah.
The hottest direction.
Taraku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Doink. Goonkahoot saw Undertaker at a Walgreens.
Sick. Sick.
That is fucking cool. Spencer Y.
Wonder Skin, it feels like real skin.
Tan your hide. It feels like real hide.
Brony underscore Danza. It's kind of like Tony Danza.
BR Deer.
Anthony Stoker.
Wunderskin. Again.
Wait. Again. Back again. Max Schism Advocate pledges his cup facing upward.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, wait. Yes. I think. Yes.
Dog Lips underscore Kajoyian.
Chris is struggling to think of a fun name and is open to suggestions. Try Apple Man.
Reb Comics.
Paul Sentient My Buddy Doll, a.k.a. the real Mr. Bad Boy.
Yeah.
I'm a bad boy.
Hurt, a.k.a. Cyber Bully.
Talene McKnight got married to Ross, not from Friends, McKnight. Hey, congrats.
Congrats. Blarbin pours orthogonally. Yes.
I mean, yes. We do. Yes.
Yeah.
Starship 9.
Logan Kilgus.
Girthworm Jim.
Boss Feratu.
Why Paul is leader?
You know why. Proper spaceman.
Smellities.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone.
Canadian Ghoul.
Bacon the Awkwardly Unseen.
R.I.P. Kevin Cole Baja blasted with a heart cannon by the King of Space.
Thank you, Baja children. Caleb Snyder, Grandmaster of Spells and Enchantments, pledges his wizard staff and ancient tome to Paul.
God damn.
Who got a pledge this month? It was me. Lumo Nuba.
Elodie.
Brian Udath.
Sterner Stock.
Kyle Welch.
Clint Deerking.
Agents Miskatonic.
A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Nowhere Lucas.
Brian Sika.
Brian Starrow.
C.L. Reagan.
Justin.
Ben Flolios Sayer.
Whew, that was a tough one, Chad.
Did I say that right?
I think you nailed it. Shayna S.
Jaybird.
Gumblegore.
And welcome, Bob Cabbage.
I was really hoping Bob Cabbage would get in here. Hello and well met, Jig-Ass Biddies 007.
Jesus Christ.
Are you playing Halo right now?
Welcome, number one gnome.
And welcome, and thank you very much, jolly old Jules.
Say goodbye to your souls, bitches.
Say goodbye to your gamer score.
Thank you all so much. We love you. Have a good time. Enjoy the next episode.
Seriously, you're stuck. You're so stuck right now. You're never leaving.
Yes.
Yeah.
Goodbye forever.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.